Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today are Duncan.
Hey.
Jeff.
Yellow.
And John.
Hi. I'm going to talk about some shit. So a season just ended and a season just began. Let's begin with the ending of the previous season.
Nice.
I'm just going to go down my list of things that I watched last season. And things that I didn't watch, but I will watch. March Comes in Like a Lion, season 2. I didn't watch it. I will watch it. It'll be good, I'm sure. Yeah, everybody
Splendid.
Seems to love it.
Amazing. Absolutely. Better than the first core.
On my list.
Yeah. Black Clover still sucks. I still didn't watch past episode 3 or 2. I don't remember. It still sucks. I can guarantee
I like
that.
Making fun of it, though. You know?
Oh, fucking garbage. so I watched the first half of Evil or Live, which is also garbage, but I watched it with my friends. Like, we just kind of picked it up on a whim and binged the first half, and we had a lot of fun laughing at it, and I think we're gonna finish it tonight. They're supposed to come over. So yeah,
is that it one. Good, or you do, or is just like laughing at how shit it is?
It's so the other one that I watched is kind of like that is King's Game, another like garbage but I wanted to laugh at it thing. I think King's Game is just bad all around, and even I couldn't laugh at it by the end. I just wanted it to be over, and I did watch all of it, and that was hell. Evil or Live, like, I don't know if it's because I was watching it with people, but we were having a lot of fun laughing at it, and I think it's better at being bad, if that makes sense.
I mean, that does make sense, because, like, I was enjoying My Girlfriend is Showbitch a lot more, which is to say not very much,
right,
but still something, once I started complaining about it publicly and having people react to that complaint.
Yeah. Garo Vanishing Lion, I did watch the first episode. It was Biker's Boobs. It sucked. I mentioned that when I went over the beginning of this last season last time, whatever. Hozuki's No Reitetsu, I watched the first few episodes of that, and then it was on High Dive and it was exclusive, so I didn't keep up with it. It was really good, and I'm going to finish it. Hozuki No Reitetsu, one of the most underrated comedy animes of all time. Everybody watch it. Yeah, Land of the Lustrous, anime of the year of all years forever, because it's good.
It's pretty good.
Anime, yeah. Steven Universe.
Yeah.
Good butts.
Mm-hmm. Good gym butts. Mm-hmm. If you've listened to this podcast, you know Land of Lustrous, so we don't need to elaborate.
Anyway, yeah, it ended really well. Wrapped up Faust's arc pretty well. Definitely a lot of room to go further. And the manga keeps going, so I know that it exists, and hopefully they'll continue to adapt it, because I think it did well. Anyway, Inuyashiki, also pretty good, not nearly as good as Land of the Lustrous, also really ugly, unlike Land of the Lustrous, and deserved to look better, but it didn't. Blood Blockade, Battlefront, and Beyond, I've gone over this before. I think it's a much better season than the first season, because it doesn't have the stupid overarching plot with fake characters named Black and White who are good and evil, or I don't, that's not even what it was.
Do you think you could skip the first season if you really didn't care and you wanted to get to the good stuff, or is it have like plot there's, that you need to know?
There's still a lot of good stuff in the first season, but could you skip it? Probably.
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend it. Kino's Journey, I didn't finish it because everybody whining about it just annoyed me into not wanting to finish it. Mahoujin Guru.
Consider that a blessing.
Sorry? Yeah, whatever. I don't want to get into it. Mahoujin Guru, way better than I thought it was ever going to be, and probably way better than it deserves to be. Just a bunch of parodies about RPGs and other shit like that, and it's funny. Ancient Magus' Bride continues to disappoint me at every turn. Asake wa Fufu, sorry?
Oh, I was just going to say, E-Virus on Karma Burn wrote an article where he's like, he likes it, but he says it's just kind of like too competent to the point where like its right. goodness feels really bland. That's and a, there's yeah. not really any texture.
That's how I've described it a lot. Like it is completely adequate and absolutely competent, but doesn't do anything special with the material, which I think is pretty good material. I don't know if I'd call the material itself the source special, but I like it a lot. Anyway, this is getting long-winded, huh? Osaka wa Fufu sucked.
Bad anime for bad people.
Yeah, Ben's gonna look at a lot. Osomatsu-san season 2.
Drunk porn.
Yeah. Osomatsu-san season 2. I really loved the first season. We talked about it a lot. This season, I feel like it tries too hard, and I don't know how to put it another way, but like, it's not as funny because it's still funny occasionally, but like, I think the hits are much less frequent, and I don't know.
Do you think they're running out of like strong material and having to like push with weaker material, or what?
It could be. I mean, I know it's an original thing, like they aren't pulling from manga or anything, like it's all off the cuff or whatever. It felt like last season, like, they started out a little rough and they figured out what worked as they went along, and it became much, much better as time went on. And then this season, it feels like they knew what worked, and then they're just trying to do that again instead of trying new things, and it, maybe that's why it's weaker. I haven't put a lot of thought into it, and I also haven't finished it. I watched like half of it so far. I still enjoy it, but just like I said, the highs are, they don't feel as high, and they're much less frequent. King's Game, I already went over that. That one sucked. Food Wars 3, I started out disliking it, and then I started liking it a lot again because I just realized, oh, it's still more Food Wars. It's still entertaining. I don't know.
We had a whole episode about it.
Yep. Girls Last Tour, I started out not liking that one, and then I kind of liked it a lot, and then at the very end, I didn't like it because I don't care about these stupid sentient post-apocalyptic mushroom people.
Spoilers.
yeah, spoilers, whatever. It didn't feel good.
I mean, I thought it was fine. It was, in terms of just like watching like little girls do cute things, if I wanted to see like military hardware cuteness, I would do Sound of the Sky or Girls in Panzer. And if I wanted to like sad dying world stuff, then I would do Haibane Renmei. And that's what I've been saying. Like it's not better than any of those.
Or humanity has declined.
Depending which direction you watch it in.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the end of last season. That's me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
It's a lot of stuff.
No? Yeah. I mean, to that, I can only add Showbitch, which was bad through and through and never got good. So.
Yeah, but I know you love talking about it. So.
I do. I love talking about bad things.
Yeah. So last season was all right.
My addition would be MMO Junkie. Which
oh, yeah. You like that one a lot.
Yeah, me too. I was into MMO Junkie, though. That was kind of my foray into like the more low-key sort of relationship-based anime that I've been watching for the last few weeks, and that was a nice way to start.
did it stick the landing? Because I know that there was some anxiousness about whether how the relationships would resolve.
I mean,
if
it's
that
not,
makes sense.
It sort of ended a bit with a to be continued, but it sort of tied up the arc. Okay, at least that's how I felt. I don't know about you, Jeff.
Yeah, I was more coming into it expecting to see the show about it being the recovery of an MMO junkie. And it seems like it could go do more with that. I had expected the relationship to consummate a lot earlier and for the show to be more about the main character, Mori Mori, getting back on her feet. I think we've already talked about this.
Oh, my sweet summer child. The relationship consummate earlier. Have you watched any romance anime?
Well, that's what I think. I didn't realize it was just going to be about them getting together. I thought it was going to be more about her and that relationship being a part of it, not being the entire thrust of the show. But that was just me playing myself. So I can't really hold the show to blame for that. And also the Blu-ray OVA episode was on onsen, which seems to be, or they at least like reference an onsen, which seems to be a trend, which also comes up in the other show that I want to watch or talk about today, which is Dragon Maid, which I know, Duncan, you're also a big fan of. I think you watched it as it was coming out. I only just watched it in the last couple of weeks. And I really liked it. I think offline I described it as, it seems like the establishing storyline of a porno that never starts. I think it overcomes the premise okay, but it never completely overcomes that sort of feel to it. But what do you think?
Came to watching it with a lot of skepticism because it's very, as you say, like a very cliched anime setup. Oh, this magical girl arrives at this person's doorstep, and
yeah, it's like a manic pixie dragon girl.
Yeah, and it was like, well, what is there really going to be here, which hasn't been done 100 times? And the answer to that is maybe a very sincere look at the idea of acceptance. Of both self and of others, which I wasn't expecting, but seemed to be what the show turned into.
Yeah, I really like, you know, like I made the joke about, you know, manic dragon maid girl, but what's really nice about the show is that the relationship, you know, it goes both ways in a lot of ways. Like it begins with Toru, the titular dragon maid, in more ways than one. Basically, you know, forcing her way into Kobayashi, the other end of the relationship, thrusting herself into her life and saying, "Oh, I'm going to be your live-in sex slave maid, and I'm going to serve you for the rest of my life," and blah blah blah. And and a lot of the comedy was just sort of that dynamic, because Kobayashi is, you know, not entirely comfortable, but also not entirely opposed to the idea. But as the relationship, you know, develops, you know, Toru gets a lot out of it as much as Kobayashi does, which was very refreshing. And the fact that a lot of the side characters also have a similar dynamic was what I really liked about the show. Mm.
It was interesting to me that Kobayashi herself was someone who seemed like had always had a life where she had had to be self-sufficient, where mm-hmm. her parents had always been busy. She'd been like a kid who you got the impression had had to not raise herself, but had a lot of time to herself and mm-hmm. and whose work dominated her life. Actually, this is just a minor detail, but is this a normal... In one of the episodes, they mentioned she's getting home at 10 o'clock at night,
mm-hmm.
which just seems like crazy.
I mean, for Crunch, it's probably normal if you're a sophomore.
Yeah, yeah. And she could have went out drinking or something. Although I don't know if she ever really did that. Yes, she did. No, she didn't. Yes, she did.
She does sometimes.
She met Toru while she was drunk after...
That's right, yeah.
After work.
But yes, during Crunch, like going home at 10 p.m. is not crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it is crazy, but it's not unexpected.
and like a lot... And a lot of Kobayashi's character development is finding more value in a life outside of work, because she grew up also, you know, being very self-sufficient, but also, you know, developing human relationships through providing services to others. Like, she's shown as being very giving and very supportive at work. Also, you know, when people take advantage of that, she isn't comfortable speaking up for herself, and a lot of the show is her coming to terms with the idea that somebody else might want to do that for her, and that it's something that she should be allowed to accept and expect, even, which, you know, is part of what, you know, makes her more comfortable with, you know, pushing back a little bit on, you know, work commitments, or at least, you know, prioritizing her life commitment, her home commitments over her work, so that she can be there for other people in a more emotional way.
Yeah. I think there's a whole conversation about when she's trying to make time to go to her sort of, I guess, adoptive daughter Kana's sports day, and mm-hmm. it's like she has some line, something along of the lines of that. She's talking to a coworker, and he says, "So are you?" And she says something like, "I don't want to go, but it's right to go."
Yeah,
and it's like this realization that she's doing this not because it's something which she wants for herself or just fulfills sort of her day to day. It's more because it's something for this relationship which she values,
mm-hmm.
which exists beyond that. That what she wants to do is something for...
She wants to be there for Kana. And Kobayashi being a sort of stand-in mother for Kana, that I think I'm the only dad on the cast, and mm-hmm. there is, and I also, you know, grew up like not being extremely interested in doing those kinds of things where like your parents show up and like cheer you on, and you kind of like growing up, you know, if you have that kind of mindset, you don't really worry about those things for yourself. But then once you have kids, being there for them is also enjoyable in and of itself. Like, there's like, if you've ever been forced to go to somebody else's kid's pageant or concert or something like that, and it's just unbearable torture, it mm-hmm. is the opposite of that when you are the parent. Like, it is genuinely lovely to see your kid proud of what they're doing and having fun. And I think that is sort of what Kobayashi also experiences through her relationship with Kana. Like, she sort of inherits this family of, you know, nearly omnipowerful dragon people who, you know, are just kind of desperate for basic relationships. And
yeah, that's an interesting thing, because you sort of talked about at the start that part of what makes this a good series is that there's growth on both sides of the relationship. It's not just Kobayashi who develops, it's Toru as well. And she sort of comes into the show as sort of someone whose entire life has almost been based around her family's business almost.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about her obligations to her family, which she seems to do grudgingly, not because she wants, but because that's what's expected of her.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes this promise to Kobayashi because Kobayashi essentially saves her life. But what I've thought about the context of this is, Toru, who by our standards is essentially immortal, and she's making a promise to stay with a human for the whole of their life, isn't actually that much of a commitment to her.
Yeah.
So it's when she makes that thing, that promise, oh, I'll be a maid for you for the rest of your life, that's like a casual thing. Yeah, you saved my life. Yeah. I'll do this for you. Why not?
It's also a commitment to watching her friend grow old and die while she continues to live on effectively forever.
And that's what it sort of builds towards after that start. That she goes from just, oh, this is just a thing I can do and have fun with, to I care about this person. And what does me caring about this person entail about our relationship as it goes on? And as John says, how does that relate to me being watching them grow old when I don't?
And that is, you know, that plays into the last arc of the show, where her father, the Emperor of Demise, comes back and confronts her with the fact that, you know, you are devoting your life to this human who will die long before you do. And you get the sense that maybe he also went through the same thing, and he's telling his daughter, this is not worth it. You are coming with me. I'm going to spare you this. And Toru almost agrees with her father, until Kobayashi says that, like, no, like, you know, I need you. You need me. Like, this is, you know, what life is. And Toru, you know, agrees with her and goes back, knowing that, you know, with full knowledge that this is a temporary thing, but they want to enjoy it, you know, while it lasts. And that was another theme of the show that comes up, that, like, being there for the things that are fleeting is as important as being there for the things that are supposedly, you know, timeless. That, like, life is a series of fleeting moments that have meaning by you being present for them, and not necessarily because of their lasting impact on the rest of the world.
Yeah, it puts me in mind of, I think that there's been a couple of shows that have this sort of idea of, like, an expanding social circle giving a character or characters, like, a greater focus on and awareness of, like, the general furniture of life. Like, I think March Comes in Like a Lion's a great example of someone who is in a much more obviously not great place than Kobayashi, although I think there is an acknowledgement in Dragon Maid that Kobayashi's kind of lived a kind of quietly sad life with, like, her only friend being her coworker, who spends all the rest of his free time playing online video games. But yeah, like, March Comes in Like a Lion's the same thing, of how people come into your life, and it not only expands your life, but also enriches the stuff that you already have. And I think Dragon Maid also does a good job of that. And it's a much more resonant theme than I feel like KyoAni stuff has had lately. So
there's an interesting crossover between those two, because sort of like towards the end of Dragon Maid, they get a Kontasu? Kotatsu. The heated Kotatsu table. And Kotatsu. That's a big thing in March as well. I think you talked about that previously, Ben, about how that sort of central table is a big part of what makes a household in Japan.
Well, wonderful. Do we want to go ahead and move on to this year's anime?
Hang on,
that we've watched, at least.
Sure.
I just have one more comment on Dragon Maid. Am I the only one who has a serious Frankenstein versus Frankenstein's monster issue with Kobayashi's Dragon Maid? I always think Kobayashi's the dragon, and then I have to double take it. It just confuses the fuck out of me.
I don't, because I like Kobayashi's design so much. He's got those like kind of mean sanpaku eyes that, and she has a, I don't know, she has a very unique design that I think is actually one of the more interesting designs, even among all the like ridiculous characters of all the dragons and their human forms.
Oh, I actually did want to say one more thing, that so many of the dragons have this like the show is definitely for guys, and the fact that all of the dragons have these like hypersexual, like idealized bodies, you know, as far as the male gaze is concerned, is kind of a, it is a theme in the show where like all of the human characters are very mild, they're very plain looking, whereas all the dragons are, you know, hyper, like, hyper sexy, like, all of their outfits are, you know, way over tailored, they have giant boobs, and there's, like, boob Foley every time they move, and that also, and I think the, like, some of the theme of the show is that these characters are intentionally supposed to be, like, escapist fantasy characters. Like, they come from, like, an RPG world that is, you know, basically, you know, it's like, you know, there are heroes and dragons and monsters and emperors, and they come to the human world, which is very flat, normal looking. And they are the kind of escapism that, you know, Kobayashi and her co-worker indulge in, but they're not also like on, like, but they're also very individual. And I think the show is about striking a balance between having a more vibrant, interesting, individualistic personality and also still being a part of society and forming those human relationships and, you know, giving of yourself unto other people as a choice, as opposed to just doing what is expected of you. To make things go smoothly, which is why I can kind of forgive the somewhat egregious character design of the show, though Lukoa just, you know,
fuck Lukoa.
Lukoa's awful.
Kill her, kill her, kill her.
I actually think Elma's worse than Lukoa, because Elma has this ridiculous suit which just for some reason just parts at the waist and just has her wearing a t-shirt with her boobs hanging out almost in an otherwise suit, whereas Lukoa is at least just someone wearing a t-shirt and hot pants, which sort of makes sense instead of just a jacket which just randomly parts at the waist.
Yeah, except Lukoa also is a fucking sexual predator on a little boy who clearly doesn't want it. It's made perfectly clear he doesn't want it.
Yeah, you think she's a demon, so yeah.
Both of those characters are kind of detritus and not really needed. Elma is mostly harmless, at least, and her jokes are about her liking food.
Yeah,
but Lukoa is
my favorite joke in the show is when they're like getting together for like a Christmas thing, and Elma's like, "I was promised that there'd be candy here, and I could eat as much as I could. I took time from my very busy schedule to come here," and it just, as a grad student, it's very, you're just like, "I was promised free food, otherwise I would have not, I have stuff I could do if I was not getting free food here." So but yeah, the designs here and there, and I mean, it's very rare that you actually have an anime, and especially a Kyoto animation anime, where there's not like some needless fan service, even if the characters are like teenage girls where they don't have these exaggerated features, they're still like very male gazy. But that's an interesting interpretation of it, I think.
I think the themes of the show almost earn it, but there are definitely a couple of side characters that ruin, that kind of sour the mixture.
And it's two side characters we just very quickly touch on, Fafnir and what's the male friend's name?
Takia, I think
it's Takia,
name.
Yeah. Those are interesting because they play it almost as an asexual couple.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't seem to have any sort of sexual desire for each other, but they seem to be very intimate and very in a relationship in any other way. You living together, sort of sharing each other's worries, etc.
Mm-hmm.
They're roommates and friends.
Fafnir as Ikikomori, like, otaku guy, I think is a very good joke if you know anything about the Fafnir of mythology. And that was another, like, sort of weird detail of the show where sometimes the characters were from like real mythology and sometimes they just weren't. But I think Fafnir as a character was a good use of that.
Okay, well now we can move on to John's, John's and all of our winter 2018 list. Is that the season?
Yeah.
They're always kind of offset weirdly, I feel like.
Yeah, well, I mean, winter starts middle of December, so
yeah,
winter season always gets me. Yeah.
Doesn't feel like it should.
It's based, their seasons are based on the season in which it starts, I guess, whatever.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Anyway, yeah, I guess we'll end with the beginning, whatever.
Yeah, you like those Lord of the Rings style, like, weird word.
It was, mazes. It was unavoidable when I accidentally said it at the beginning. Now I had, okay, I'm doing it again. Ah, geez, there's a lot I've watched.
Yeah. Well, that's the fun part. We'll have a lightning round. Come on. Yeah, okay. Is it going to be good or bad? We'll just do it.
Yeah, okay. A Place from Further Than the Universe is the best thing so far this season, two episodes in. It's cute girls doing cute things, but the thing doing is going to Antarctica. Fuck yeah. The art's really good, too. It's got a pretty distinct style. And the characters are great. I like the characters a lot.
Co-signed. It's very good.
Do you find the dark-haired girl's smile slightly disturbing?
Oh, it's fucking great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. She's like so into it. Her, it's like the most, like, she has the longest mouth ever and it just curves up so harshly. Ah, yeah. It's great.
It belies the intensity that character has internally, but does not demonstrate unless it's under like very specific circumstances.
Mm. Yeah. It conveys a very intense happiness. Like, yeah. Oh, we are doing this and I am stoked.
Yeah. Over the fucking moon.
Yeah.
it's almost like we are doing this. And if you have any regrets about this down the line, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're here and you're coming along and we're doing this.
Yeah. I love it a lot. It's definitely my favorite so far this season. Next, yeah. Ramen Girl. I watched the first episode. It was fine. I started the second episode, 30 seconds. And then I was like, why am I doing this? And then I deleted it from my queue. Playback Camp. Or Yuru Camp, whichever title you prefer. I really like it because I like the idea of camping and they're just like so into this. So far, it's just the two characters that are into camping to it extreme degrees.
Exactly well, actually, what it
just
says. The
one. But they're just so chill and laid back. I love the music. It's real nice. And this is my comfy anime for the season, probably.
Your love of the countryside and like rural stuff is. It's endlessly true. Funny to me. You just like, you want, were you in Boy Scouts or anything where you'd go out and do that sort of stuff?
I was in Boy Scouts, yeah. And I've camped periodically throughout the years. I was in an outdoors club in college. After college, I kind of haven't done shit and it's a perpetually annoying fact of my life that I would like to amend but can't find anyone to amend it with. So I might just have to start go camping on my own like this girl does. She just fucking goes somewhere and she's like, here's some money and I'm going to camp by myself. And she's like, I think she's in high school, but she looks like she's more like middle school because, of course, they do. but yeah, I mean, she's just, man, I want to be like her. I mean, she does go like baby camping. She goes to like, you know, fields where a bunch of tents are set up or whatever. But I still love that too. So whatever.
So it's actually missing something that you used to do and not just like being the typical city slicker who's like, man, I'd love to get away. And then like 10 seconds into your camping trip, you're like, fuck this. I want electricity and TV.
Oh yeah. No, I actually enjoy camping thoroughly whenever I do it.
good to know. I've learned something about you, John. Thanks.
Oh, hooray. I'm glad I could educate everybody about me, which I love to do because I'm great. So, okay. Next, Ito Junji Collection. I was pretty skeptical about this before I saw it because how are you going to do horror? Like you can't, his horror is pretty intrinsic to the art of manga. Like it's very detailed when he draws something horrifying. And that's often very hard to translate to animation. And I think that remains true with this. That said, the first episode was hilarious. It featured a boy who just tried to curse all of his things, but it was ultimately a harmless curses. Like he buried a dude in the ground, but the whole thing was he'd just come back and he wasn't going to die or be harmed or anything. He would just come back later and it was going to be so funny.
Yeah.
That's
and then
weird.
Like he tries to help a dude by like, basically bullying someone else with a curse with like a giant spider illusion or something. And the guy that he helps or he thinks he's helping is like, why did you do that? You're fucking weird. And then he gets called out to the park and he like, and then the curse boy chases him around like on stilts with like wooden elongated arms and then gets caught in a bear trap. It's funny. Like, I didn't expect it to be funny, but, like, some of Ito Junji's stuff is more funny than it is actually horrifying, just because it's absurd. Mm-hmm. This one's trying to be funny more than most of his stuff, though, and it works. And then the end is a doll episode, which I know Ray, or, like, a doll story, very short, like, a couple minutes, which I know Ray liked. I found it similarly funny, but not because it was trying to be.
I think Jinjo Uti...
Jinjo Uti.
That guy, I think his work is better in short bursts. I think I really like his ideas, and I really like the way that they make my imagination go wild with it. And I found the doll story really resonant, just because, you know, pulling the dad card again, like that is like a real, like, just sort of omnipresent worry. And also the fact that that story was about how we're not going to give up, and that just makes things infinitely worse instead of just giving up immediately like everybody else does. And also the fact that, oh, this is a world where people's kids just turn into dolls, and the, you know, the thing to do is just to immediately burn them if that happens. And so that's just kind of like, you know, oh, it's, you know, that's like a cancer story, and but, you know, completely undermines what you're supposed to do, you know, if your kid gets sick, which is not give up on them.
I was skeptical about it because I don't know, I feel like just a show that's just all a series of horror stories can often be exhausting. Like, I think I've held off watching Mononoke forever because it's like, oh, a samurai horror tales sort of thing. Like, nah, I don't
want to watch it. Mononoke is not very horror, it's kind of just supernatural. But
I mean, I think that's how you do it better, is you make it actually like supernatural, as opposed to just like something bad happens at the end of every episode.
And so, I think also the fact that the tone of the show like swings so wildly from like goofy to just like horrible to tense works in its favor, as opposed to being incoherent.
Yeah. Did you watch the second episode?
I have. Yeah.
Okay. So the second episode, it is more consistently trying to be creepy. I think I might be jaded. Whenever I see something scary, I just kind of roll my eyes at this point. Even Ito stuff, like even reading the manga. Like, I read the first half of the second episode is a story about this like weird, creepy ass just model who this dude sees, and then later she applies her role in his movie. Mm-hmm. And she just got this fucking creepy face, and you know that she's creepy, but the story is like kind of trying to say, hey, maybe she's not creepy, but actually she is creepy, and then she ends up eating everybody or whatever. And spoilers. The whole time I'm just kind of rolling my eyes and laughing at how goofy the whole idea is, because she's so creepy, guys.
It's like if like Jason from Friday the 13th showed up at an open casting, and everybody was just like, no one wants to offend Jason because maybe he's actually a nice guy. We haven't actually seen him kill anybody with a machete yet. And like, if he was in our movie, maybe it would be cool. And like, everybody's just kind of like, we don't want to offend her. Like, maybe we're just being assholes. Oh, no, she is actually exactly what she looks like. She is a shark tooth demon woman who will kill everybody. And like, their good manners being their downfall was, I think, as a Canadian, I think that was very resonant.
Do I understand correctly that they're selling this as a collection of shorts by different directors?
I don't think so.
I don't know about the directors, but it's definitely a collection of Ito's stories. That's all I really know.
Maybe I misread then.
They're all totally like disconnected. There's no indication that they're all in the same world at all. It's like, it's kind of like The Outer Limits, only they're all stories by the same guy.
It's because it's just with you hearing you guys talk about how the tone, and
I think that's just the source material, not the direction. I think the direction is fairly consistent in my opinion. Even if it's not the same director, like it feels like they're pulling from the same bag of tricks.
Yeah, they have a pretty house style.
That said, I just want to briefly touch on the second half of the second episode, which is a lot more psychological horror. Like, it's about this guy, like, who is having dreams that last days and then weeks and then months and then finally years, and then he just kind of decays into a pile of dust. Spoilers. that works a lot better for me, because, like, the horror of having to live out literal years in your dreams sounds like, I don't want that, you know? But then they showed him, like, they drew him and had him running around like a goofy ass creepy dude who was just this husk of a human, and I don't know. I don't know about visual. I think horror works for me a lot better these days when it's, I mean, I guess it was always true. Horror works better when it's shown and not or when it's told and not shown. Yeah,
whatever. Yeah, implied. Like the more light and oxygen a horror story gets,
it's kind of the opposite of like how exposition works. Show don't tell in exposition, but with horror, it's tell don't show. You know,
or like, or like at least heavily imply but don't show.
Yeah, right.
Don't show the monsters. It's exactly why I'm worried about the new Annihilation movie that's coming out in February, because like the books are great about just like telling you about people's reaction to the thing and not telling you about the thing that is happening there. And the trailers show a lot of stuff they didn't need to show, like fucked up feathered slime deer from Area X. And yeah, but this, the director is Takashiro Shinobu, and he has been a character designer for the past 10 years, and this is the second thing he's ever directed after Diabolic Lovers, so...
Well, all right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting pedigree.
So what else are you watching?
Okay, yeah, sorry. That one went longer than I expected.
I knew we were going to talk a lot about it, so yeah. Yeah.
Record of Grand Crest Wars sucks. Yep. I watched 5 minutes of it, sadly. And that was five minutes too long.
I don't know why we did that, but yeah.
Yeah.
The Record of the Grand Crest War.
Okay. That's, you got it out of your system. Gotcha. It's from the Lotus War guy, everybody. That's why he made that joke.
Yeah. Pop Team Epic sucks. I don't like the source material, but I also think that this is a terrible adaptation because it's just skit after skit after skit with no downtime, and it's just like rapid fire gags and meme fuel and
We will definitely be talking about it in the future when Andy's here, because Andy loves
it. That is the last thing I'll say on this podcast about Pop Team Epic ever. That's probably not true.
That's definitely not true.
Mitsubishi Colors is about these three girls who just want to keep peace in the town, but they're also kind of evil. They're just like pieces of shit. Like, they try to kill a cop at one point.
Yeah, I love that show. It's real good. It's my comfort show.
I enjoyed parts of it, but I think it was too long. It dragged out each individual. Like, it was a series of three stories, kind of, and I feel like it dragged out the first two, at least, for longer than they needed to be.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one is Koku. Koku. I'm trying to say it like Japanese.
Kokoro Connect.
Koko. No. Kokoku is about this this woman's niece or nephew. Niece? One of those two. Gets kidnapped and they try to ransom. Yes. Kidnapped, ransom, demand. Yes. And she's like really scared, so she starts storming off, and then her dad's like, or actually her grandpa's like, hey, wait. I got this magic stone that lets us stop time, and then we can just leisurely walk there and get them out, and it'll be fine. So they do that, but then some other people show up who also has stopped time, or who are in the same space of stopped time, I guess. That sounds really generic, but I actually liked it a lot. I felt like it was a really strong first episode. It might be my second favorite series so far, which is, you know, very early on. That doesn't mean a whole lot, but it has pretty low production values, or at least it's not that great, like art wise. But the character, it's nice how together these characters are. They're not freaking out constantly about everything. They appear competent, and I don't know. They're very real people. It's almost like I would like to see a slice of life of this family where something didn't go crazy wrong.
Yeah,
like I like the presentation of who they are.
Yeah. And on the flip side, like I've only seen the PV for this so far. I plan on watching it, but it seems like it's a show that has a high concept that they then explore to its fullest extent, which is something I really appreciate about a show that has. Like, you know, it has a planned beginning, middle, and end, whereas, like, if it was here, it would just be like, oh, you know, these are this is his family, and they have this thing, that they have this trick that they can do, but then, like, the rest of the world doesn't really change, whereas it seems like this is something that might explore that a little bit more.
Yeah, and then the end of the first episode, I don't think a second one's out yet, but the end of the first episode, like, this weird, like, giant creature made out of tree branches or something. I don't know, it's like in CG, it's really bad CG, but he shows up and like that's the end of the episode, and it gives you this impression that there's some serious shit going on, like that none of the characters are prepared for except for the old grandpa who knows about it and was really, really didn't want to ever have to do this, but you know, was forced into it. Really strong first episode. I'm probably not selling it as hard as I should, but I would recommend at least trying and help.
What was this again?
Kokoku, Kokoku.
Kokoku?
Kokoku, yeah.
Okay.
Next up. sorry. Katakao Josu no Takagi-san. So this is a story about... Have you ever seen Tonari no Sekikun? If not, that's a great show. It's about this dude who just messes around in class, and this girl sitting next to him is like, what the fuck are you doing? And it plays really well.
We've talked about it here.
So, yeah. Plays really well with the idea of escalating the situation into absurd degrees, which I've talked about a lot, and I like that kind of shit in anime and I guess other things. But Takagi-san is kind of similar to that, except it's this boy trying to basically the girl keeps playing pranks on him, and it's obvious that he like she's crushing on him and kind of he's crushing back, but you know, they're little kids, so they just kind of mess with each other instead. Mm-hmm. But she's always like getting him, like she's always playing pranks on him, and he's like the one who gets embarrassed. He like shouts out in class, the teacher's like, hey, what are you doing? And then he's always trying to get back at her, but she always turns it around back on him, and I think it's really funny and cute, and I will continue watching it.
It's
also very like sweet. Sorry, it's very sweet and innocent. Like there's nothing creepy about it, which I fucking appreciate so much.
Yes, I agree. And they have like a real sort of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck dynamic whole show is about the boy just like obsessed with the idea of trying to get her back, and she is always one step ahead of him, and it's really cute, and I'm interested to see how they carry it out for a whole season, and it seems like the surrounding characters also have a lot of potential. Like there's this weird caveman looking girl, and they're extremely dour gym teacher / English teacher who is just like this like constant threat that, you know, if things get too wild. And yeah, it's a cute show. I'm definitely interested in seeing more.
Are they full length episodes, or are they like shorts like Tonari no Sekikun?
It is a full length episode, unlike Sekikun. Huh. Yeah.
But there is also they were kind of broken up into like sort of sub stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit. Sekikun is like one gag per episode. This was a few. And it kind of came together into a cohesive whole, but it was also separated, you know what I mean?
The pacing is good in a way that that good in Mitsubishi Colors.
Yeah, exactly. Also talking about these things makes me realize how weird it is that anime exists, because I'm like shows with middle schoolers and
middle schoolers playing pranks on each other, something that would never get a TV show in America.
And it would actually make a really good kids show that I think adults would enjoy too. Mm-hmm. And it probably is that way in Japan, but over here, yeah, like something like
over this, here we get Paw Patrol, so yeah.
Next on the list, Yamushi Pedal. It's more Yamushi Pedal. That's all I have to say about that. I like it. Overlord 2, it's back. Hey, cool. Overlord 2 is another isekai show, or Overlord is another isekai show. The first season aired last year? 2 years ago, maybe. I liked it a lot. It's one of those stronger ones. In this one, he spawns into the world in his character, which is his avatar is like a giant creepy skeleton dude, and so when he spawns in, he kind of like plays the role of a villain, like conquering the land, but he's like deep down he's a good guy, whatever. But he's literally just overpowering everyone and conquering shit and like using his power to better everything. So I don't know if that's ever going to go anywhere, like, oh, is he really the bad guy? But I don't know, it's really good. I like it a lot. I like the characters that like get involved with him and all that jazz, whatever. Overlord 2, hooray, it's back. Takanomi, this is something Ben might want to talk about. I was kind of bored, but I think it's up Ben's alley more than mine.
I think I only like it insofar as it does what I fervently wished that Osaka Wafufu would do, which is just be an episode with more going on than a stay-at-home husband getting a stressed-out wife drunk. And granted, there's a lot of drinking, and I've laughed at the fact that they like... So this girl comes to Tokyo, and she lives in a group house with three other women, and it turns out they all like to drink a lot. And so when she comes into the house, like, one of the girls, it's her day off, and she's just like, it's like early afternoon, and she's just got like 7-8 beer cans around her, yeah. And she's just drunk and half asleep on the sofa, and they like flash up on the thing like, please keep your day drinking to a minimum. It's just like... And there's another time where they talk about how great a Yebisu beer is, because just like Osaka Wafufu, it's about spotlighting a certain alcohol, and kind of in reverse from Wakako Sake, they spotlight an alcohol and then they have a food with it. And so they make tempura and they drink Yebisu beer, and she's like throwing the blonde girl who is really drunk when she entered the scene, like, is throwing that beers, and it's like, please drink slowly, just splashing up the body. So
yeah, they were definitely funny moments for sure.
Yeah, and it's just, it's better than Asako with Fufu. It's 100%. More self-aware and less precious. So yeah,
you seem to have come out of this a lot more favorably than I did. I sort of found the way they talked about the beer very sort of infomercially. Like, it's like, this is this beer.
Definitely, yeah. When she was pouring the beer, I was like, oh man, this is, they're really going all in on how to pour a beer.
but it actually was actual information. And sure, yeah, I don't, it was a bit infomercially, but the next one is a shochu highball. And I, if they have a label there that they make a big deal out of, like they did with the Yebisu beer, I'll be weirded out. But otherwise, I think it was just centering a very prominent product, like hook people in who wouldn't watch anime, but like, hey, there's a, hey dad, there's an anime about your favorite beer sort of thing going on. I don't know. Yeah. It really is just from the experience of having disliked Asako with Fufu so much that like Takunomi is just like competent anime. And I think I've talked on this podcast and with y'all a lot about just like after watching something bad, just being excited, like, hey, Squid Girl doesn't mess things up as badly as it doesn't mess things up at all. It's just fine all the way through. So, and if you're done with your list, then I have one more to add.
I got three more.
Oh, gee. Okay. We'll get to those three and then I get to talk.
Okay. Fair enough. Violet Evergarden is the new Kyoto animation joint, which is convenient because we talked about Kobayashi Dragon Maid. this one is so far about this girl who was in the army and she really loved her major and she like almost died. She lost both of her arms. They replaced with these cool like robot hands now and whatever. it seems like it might lean into the idea of dealing with PTSD, and I really hope it does. If it doesn't, I'll be a little bit disappointed. Right now she's been lied to and thinks her major's still alive. She doesn't know what love means. Clearly she had a broken like childhood, and she's a little bit broken from the war as well, so it'll probably be about her growing as a person and learning how to live outside of the context of war, and that could be very interesting. I tend to like Kyoto animation stuff, as I think I said before. I am looking forward to this one. I'm optimistic about it.
I've sort of come out of that not very optimistic.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, it was really beautiful. Really, really beautiful, but it was just so little to it, so little. The way they introduced her, I struggled to give a damn. It's like, yeah, she's had this, all these horrific things, but they sell it so badly. It's like,
I don't think they do at all.
No, yeah.
I think they do a very good job of showing how fucked up she is and how, well, yeah, fucked up she is. And like, I don't know, like, what more do you need from that? What are you missing?
I don't know. I guess it's just like this. She's just another emotionless super killer. And this is and
yes,
now
but
she's
this isn't about her killing. This is about her not killing. Like that, to me, that makes it a lot more interesting than, yeah, this character trope exists a lot. But it's always from the perspective of them actively killing and also trying to, you know, grow as a human or whatever the fuck.
Discover what love is.
Yeah, yeah. In this case, like, she's done with that, ostensibly. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
And I find that very interesting.
So is it like Rurouni Kenshin, where it's like she had this past as like this hyper-violent killer, and now she doesn't want to kill anymore, but she's still fighting every episode? Or
No. She's living in a...
It's almost like she doesn't know what to do.
Exactly. The fighting is over. The war is very explicitly over. They say that multiple times throughout the episode. There is no war anymore. She keeps wanting to go back to like take more orders because she doesn't know what the fuck to do without those orders. But the war is over, guys. And she needs to deal with that and learn how to live. I think that's cool, or at least I think that's a good premise for a show.
Yeah, weirdly, what it reminds me of is I don't know if any of you have ever watched Mahoromatic. Automatic Maiden.
God, a long time ago, but yeah.
It's not, this is not a recommendation because Mahoromatic is the worst kind of like late 90s ultra etchy, like jiggly, like floppy boob everywhere sort of thing. But like the premise itself that there's this, that Mahoro is this android who was charged with protecting this general, and the general died and she failed. And so once she's retired and she's retired and she has like I think like 300 days before like her power core runs out and she'll be deactivated permanently. She decides to spend those last 300 days like being a maid for the general's son. And at the end of every episode, they just have a countdown of like how many days she has left before her core expires. And so it's kind of like a nice sort of thing of just like, well, if you've been built for war, if you've grown up in war, like what does peacetime look to you? And I don't know. I feel like the countdown of the days accentuates that. But of course, Mahoromatic fails. It doesn't even – spoilers – doesn't even stick to the deactivation thing.
Of course it doesn't, yeah.
Like, she comes back at the end and she's like, hey, I got a new power core. I'm like, well, what the fuck? But yeah, no. So I'm watching people watching Violet Evergarden with the hopes that it taps into that. But I don't know. I think sometimes Kyoto Animation – often depending on the director and producer, can tap into like really profound thematic resonances, and sometimes they make trifles. And so I don't really want to commit until I've heard if it's one or the other definitively.
Yeah, I'll have more to say on it in the future, I am sure. And finally, I'll actually have two more, but the last one won't do anything. Hakume Tomikochi is about these two little gnomes who are living in a forest, and like, I really like it because everything is scaled up. Like they're really tiny, you know, so they're chopping down leaves for things instead of chopping down trees. If that makes sense. Like leaves off of plants. They are smaller than birds, smaller than cats, smaller than badgers. And, you know, it's a, I don't know if they're gnomes or whatever. You know, they live nearby a town that's run by animals, like shops run by animals and by other little gnomes. And it's just kind of this neat little lived in world. It's also, I really want to play this video game. It's got this world that's built perfect for a video game of wandering around this scaled up like grassland, forest, whatever. Like they tame a bird at the very end. I want to play this game.
Maybe beware then, because I think the last time you said that was made in Abyss. This could go bad places.
This is not going to go that way. There's no
you
way.
Say that now. Could go
well, in a different direction to a completely different bad place, though.
Yeah, it could just be a shit anime in the end. And then finally, Darling in the Franxx. I have not seen it. I think it looks like it's going to be super generic. I think Duncan's seen it.
I have watched the first episode very hurriedly before we started recording. It's pretty much what you'd expect from Trigger.
Yeah.
Killing anime.
I don't know. It's like, it's they have, when I first started watching Kill la Kill, there was like a lot in it which annoyed me, but these little touches which were really smart and made you think that, well, maybe they do have something more in mind here. And it could still go either way. It could still just be fan servicey and mecha trash.
Is it as like wacky and extra as Kill la Kill was?
No, it's more. It's definitely more self serious and more close to something like, what's a good touchstone? Maybe
Evangelion.
No, I was going to say perhaps Eureka 7.
Okay.
Oh, that's not a good recommendation.
But just in terms of its level of seriousness, treats its world seriously, but there's humor within it.
Right.
I mean, it's a show about like kids pilot robots, and if you can't pilot a robot, you're a nobody. And I assume there's a kid who can't pilot a robot and struggles with being a nobody.
I maintain that Kiznaiver was actually good, so I believe the Trigger can do good. Every preview, everything I've seen from this makes it just look like it's going to be super generic. I'll give it a shot. I'm going to watch the first episode.
Yeah, same.
But yeah.
I'll probably watch the whole thing in that case. But like, I felt bad because I just kept making fun of the fact that it's Franxx with two X's and no K or S. And just after a few months of just mistyping the number of X's or typing way too many X's or typing three X's and then laughing to myself, I feel like I should actually watch it to atone.
Just on that, is that from the PVs, I always assumed that was a chromosome thing, like XY and XX.
Oh.
Anything's possible is my answer to that. I don't think so. I think it's completely just being weird and aesthetic. And Franxx with two X's, so it's not just Darling inside a bunch of guys named Frank. You're welcome.
It's actually an anime about selling hot dogs.
Okay, well, to add to that, I just watched the first episode of Degashikashi 2. I do not remember if we've ever talked about Degashikashi.
We have.
Okay, well, I like it a lot. It's a comedy where most of the humor comes from the fact that there is this, like, hot goth lowly girl with nice boobs. Oh, wow, you talked about it as soon as episode 23. That's surprising to me.
I think you said those exact words, too.
because I was talking about the art style. Anyway, so there's this girl. She is the heir to a candy fortune. Or not candy, like in Japan.
Confectionery.
Kashi mean like snacks. They can be like salt, savory, or sweet. But she's heir to this like fortune. And she knows everything about it. And so it's this kid who's working at his dad's candy shop. And doesn't really like it and wants to be a manga artist. And she like just bugs him and tells him about all how awesome candy is all the time. And they're very detailed, history focused descriptions of like why this candy is amazing. And this continues in Degashikashi 2, where he's like, man, I wish I could have tonkatsu. And she like runs up and breaks in and she's like, why tonkatsu? And you can have big katsu. And it's this prepackaged, desiccated fish, pork flavored fish bar. And she like makes him eat, she brings like rice with her so he can like have like fake tonkatsu, which is fried pork cutlets, but makes him put the dried fish bar on top of the rice and eat it like it's tonkatsu. And he's like not too jazzed about it. I don't know, it's funny because like he's just like oh yeah. I mean, he has the feeling that like any normal person has towards like candy and sweets and snacks. Like, oh yeah, I could go for some. But then like she's like really into it and is kind of just like sexually titillated by the existence of so many different kinds of candy. And I don't know, it made me laugh.
They do lean into that.
They had a running joke of how she like keeps running to burst in, and then she like spins a few minutes just like panting and like trying not to throw up because she's like really out of shape because all she has is eat candy. And that was pretty funny. I don't know, I like it. I'm hoping it's gonna stay.
Is this show like a satire of the like really into food anime like the other one that you mentioned before, or is it like is it pro snacks, or is it like making fun of snacks?
I think that it is enamored with the wide range of sweet and savory snacks and soft drinks that exist in Japanese culture, and proud of its knowledge of the history, while at the same time realizing that caring a lot about such stuff is ludicrous, and therefore it needs like a ludicrous goth lowly girl in a corset who always looks just kind of like whacked out on caffeine to like give these extreme statements. Like, I know John's at least seen it. I don't know if you've seen it, Duncan, but there's a whole episode where there's a whistle candy where you like lick out the center and then blow through it. It makes a whistle noise. And there's like, a 4 minute interlude of just like, anthropomorphic whistle candy, like having a really bad life and like resolving to become better and become the best candy in the world. And I don't know, it's kind of taking the piss, but also like it's real information about Japanese candy, which a lot of it's kind of whack and kind of like old people candy, like Charleston Chew stuff in Western culture. Just like you wouldn't consider it, but since Japanese culture tends to like not have as much of a sweet tooth, there's a bigger range of stuff for it. I don't know, it's funny. It's mostly just like watching these characters just like wig out over candy, but also have a lot of like real crunchy information in there. It's fun. I laugh a lot watching it. The first season is very funny. The second season, I feel like since they only have a half of the usual runtime, they're only 11 minutes long, that it kind of didn't have as much time to like luxuriate in stupid jokes like the anthropomorphic whistle candy guy. But it was still funny because like the girl who's like the love interest for the guy who has this absurd snaggletooth and works at a ramen shop was talking about like, man, I wish I could have some noodles. And he's like, oh, we live in a ramen shop. He's like, no, like fancy noodles with, you know, spaghetti, and like a garçon serves them to you. And she's all dressed up fancy in her imagination, but still has this like big ass snaggletooth sticking out of her mouth. And then Hotaru runs in and is like, there's cup spaghetti. And she makes her the cup spaghetti. And she's like, oh, this is okay. And that's the joke. Like this big speech about how like it's cup spaghetti, and like Japan's innovation has come up with even spaghetti in a cup. just like ramen in a cup. And you can also make ramen in a cup with spaghetti. It's I don't know. It's funny. It's kind of a trifle, which is appropriate since it's about candy. So
I will say I did not like the first season because I felt like a lot of the bits were boring. Like there was one where I think a girl was trying to pick up or match a bunch of cards or something, and that was where I quit. That said, lately I've been thinking about retrying it, and you're selling me on it again, so I hate you.
Oh, it's only 12 episodes. I do as a pitch someday.
Yeah.
Just transitioning to another thing which one of us hates. I watched the first episode of After the Rain, which is a somewhat sincere attempt to do a love story between a seemingly 15, 16-year-old student and her 45-year-old manager at her part-time job. And it was like, okay, well, what are they just going to do this as a show which sort of examines how dumb your teenage crushes are and sort of picks apart the psychological idiocy of youth? But no, it's perfectly sincere and incredibly old-fashioned, both in its art style and in the way it sort of does the building of the relationship. It's like she's incredibly shy of him and blushes every time he looks her way and is always like drops a plate every time she hears one of her co-workers talking about his ex-wife or the fact he has a son. It's like, and it just seems such a weird series to create. I mean, it's like I was hoping for this psychological depth, and all I got is this very sincere, very rote, old-fashioned love story between two people who it really shouldn't be.
And it's interesting because this is the same studio that's doing Ancient Magus Bride, and the director is a guy who's worked on the Doraemon movies since like time immemorial. Although he also directed Space Brothers, which I know that John Brothers kind is great. Of likes.
Oh man, but I just kind of like it. It's one of my faves. It's very long and it doesn't really end, but I still recommend it. Do it, everybody. Go. Thanks. Okay.
But yeah,
go
on. It does seem very traditional because she like used to be part of the track and field club, but she hurt her leg, so she's working in a part-time restaurant, and it seems very traditional. I mean, I like the art style because of its kind of old-fashioned look, where like the hair is really like regular and patterned and their eyes are like big and angular, and I don't know. But I don't know. I went into this, what this kind of reminds me of actually is watching Kimi ni Todoke just based on the art style, and then man, that one was slow, super traditional, like shy girl learns the courage to like basically return the feelings that the guy who likes her already has towards her, and she just is just like shy and dumb.
I like that show. I don't like this show.
I deeply dislike Kimi ni Todoke, so this is interesting. If you keep watching it, I'll have to ask you again on a future episode.
It's just like, it seems so, it's almost like an artifact from like 10, 15 years ago. It doesn't feel like it belongs now. So I'm sort of watching it out of a weird formalist interest in it and why it's doing what it's doing the way it's doing, rather than any interest in the story it's telling.
Well, it's interesting because it's based on a manga from 2014 and it's like the guy Masayuki Jun's, it's his first manga, so it is like it's a new manga by a newcomer, so it's weird that it would be so old-fashioned. But that's interesting. I don't know, like old stuff can be good, which is a transition to the stuff that I've been watching since I have only watched a couple stuff from the new season. I've been sick and laid up, so I had time for lots of anime. I watched Tamayura, which is by Junichi Sato, who, Duncan, you'll know him as the director of Princess Tutu. But he cut his teeth on Sailor Moon, Ojamajo Doremi, Kaleidostar. And lately he's been doing stuff like Aria, if you remember Aria, or Umi Monogatari. So he does like these really peaceful anime. And Tamayura is, to simply put, it's kind of reminiscent of Non-Non Biori, and that's a healing anime about girls living out in the country. this girl's father was really into photography and he died suddenly in the past few years, and she used to not be into photography because of that, but she's decided to take up her camera and start taking pictures again, and she moves to his hometown to go to school there to like get a better connection with who he was, and makes friends with three other girls who are respectively interested in being a pastry chef, a singer, and a potpourri or like scents manufacturer, if you can get the theme here of sight, taste, smell, and sound. And then her friend back home makes puppets and plushies, and so you get touch. So they're five of them are the five senses. But just, it's nice. They're just all kind of their own person, and they're kind of growing. And the OVA, which is only four episodes, is just them hanging out at the beginning of high school. And then there's two seasons, Tamayura Hitototse, and Tamayura More Aggressive, which are their two subsequent years of high school. And then there's four movies in the Japanese sense, where they're like 40 to 50 minutes long, that are called Tamayura Graduation Photos. And that's them graduating. And so it's just, I don't know, just like 20 hours of content that's just these kind of nice girls growing up and kind of the pain of growing up, the excitement of becoming someone, the difficulty of like finding your path in life. And it was just, they've just been a good time, and they really are like have a healing feeling to them. So I really enjoyed that. And then the other thing I was watching, Jazz Hands, is I finally finished Banner of the Stars, which is a space opera that I think I like talked about back in episode one, which is really good. Yeah. It's basically there's a bunch of different races of human in this galaxy. There's no aliens, but it's this kind of space opera where there's these different human polities. And then there are a group of people called the Ob, who are the descendants of people who went into space on like generation ships at the beginning of the human spaceflight era. And they've been genetically engineered to be like space only. They live in these massive floating cities. And they, the planets they rule over have like regular humans on them that they just have like a feudal proxy situation with. And there's this big fight.
Do they look different?
Yeah, they have long blue hair and elf ears.
okay.
Yeah, it's not like great, but they're based on a series of five novels, which are called Banner of the Stars. And Crest of the Stars is the prequel about how the two main characters met each other. But what's interesting and what distinguishes it from the other big space opera and anime, Legend of Galactic Heroes, is that it's very focused on the two characters, which are the son of a feudal lord of a recently conquered planet, and a girl who's later revealed to be one of the granddaughters of the current emperor. So they meet and they fall in love, and it's just them. It's them trying to escape a planet because the humans attack the Ob, and actually ultimately end up losing rather egregiously. And it's kind of telegraphed from the start that they're like, they don't actually understand the Ob, and they're attacking them out of ignorance as opposed to out of knowledge. But it's them escaping the planet together, and they kind of fall for each other, but in the very Japanese way, don't actually fucking say it, for like two more seasons. And then she gets assigned to Spaceship, which is like the coming of age thing for every Imperial princeling. And he acts as her first officer, and they go into battle. And that's the first season of Banner of the Stars. And then the second season is they're in charge of, their ship is tasked as like an occupying force on a planet that ends up being a planet full of prisoners who are put there because of extreme violent crimes. And they have to deal with administering not a normal planet with like resources and production and civilians, but just a planet of violent criminals. And then the third series is them going home back to the guy's original planet, which has been recaptured by the Ob. And it's just, the characters are really good and really focused. And they're these very, very small stories. Like, it's literally just like coming up with who's going to run this planet and how to administer it, or just like the perspective of an intergalactic conflict from the perspective of a very small picket ship at one end of the battle. And I don't know. They seem like really real people. And as opposed to Legend of Galactic Heroes, which has these like larger than life humans who have these intensely well thought out ideas of war and society and ideology, these are just kind of people caught in a space conflict, and they have some apprehension of what's going on, but not much. It's more about how they find refuge in each other and how they work together to cope with the situations. And I don't know, I like it a lot. And it's because Bandai had the license and Bandai folded years ago, it's impossible to get, but Funimation bought the license recently, and hopefully once it's available on Blu-ray and streaming, like, it'll get the attention it deserves, because I think it's actually like one of the two great space operas in anime, and I never hear anyone talk about it. So
yeah. I want to watch it.
It's good. It's really good. The first season especially, because it kind of stands apart from the rest, and it's literally just like a space adventure where these like two figures are trying to navigate a war zone without like getting killed, and with the fact that one of them looks very much like a space elf, and if they get caught, she'll be killed and he'll be probably killed for being a collaborator with the enemy. I don't know. There's a little bit of like heavy-handed racism of like, why do people hate the Ob? And it's like, oh, because they're perfect. And like, yes, they're too perfect. They're not human. They don't have flaws. They just like work as cogs in the machine. And that's kind of dumb. But it's, I think, the only dumb part in what's otherwise a very, very thoughtful show that like wants you to understand its characters as a way of understanding its world.
Yeah.
What's it like visually? Is it quite rich, or is it...
It's, I mean, unfortunately, it exists at that transition zone of late 90s to early 2000s where you start getting CG. There's, like, the space battles are mostly CG. Oh, that's the other cool thing, is that, like, the technology of, like, spaceflight and stuff is interesting, where ships move normally, but they can use gates to move into planar space where distances are vastly contracted, and most battles happen as sending out like long range autonomous mines to attack other bubbles of ships.
Nice.
It's very rare that like ships actually join bubbles together and fight like with laser cannons. It's usually just like laying mines for other people to blunder into, and like not knowing, because you can detect the bubbles, but you can't detect who's inside the bubbles. So there's this tension of like, oh, is it a bubble with a single mine in it, or like 1,000 mines, or a bunch of ships? Or so, yeah, there's that. The first season of Banner of the Stars is especially good for just like space battle goodness, and I put it up there with a Starship Operators, just having like good space battles that are about the hardware being used. But they are mostly in CG, and the art itself is very, I'd say, a bit old fashioned. It feels mid 90s, where like kind of disproportionate, I'd say almost like Evangelion type figures, where they're kind of like long and lanky, and they have heads with expressive eyes. But I don't know, I'm also watching them on like really crappy like standard definition rips, and it might actually turn out to be a very beautiful series on high definition. But it's just kind of, it's not a looker, but it's very different in terms of its art. And so yeah, I don't know, it looks very, it reminds me actually of Turn A Gundam in terms of a show that looks like it was made 10 years before, but on the other hand, it is not incredibly beautiful like Turn A Gundam is. So yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it has that weird like 90s style where everybody has a head that's half as short as it should be.
Yeah, and their hair is kind of just like, we would think of them as dreadlocks if we weren't acquainted with the visual language of anime, where they're just, their hair like hangs in like thick limbs.
Chunks.
And yeah. I don't know. I got used to it, and I actually kind of found it very attractive by the end, but it's definitely, you're not going to be like, you're not going to see a screenshot of Crest of the Stars and be like, whoa, what is this? I've got to see this. But then again, we just talked about Kyoto Animation, how they often use beautiful art to paper over a story that's just kind of there. So,
hey,
looks can be deceiving.
Stop insulting Kony in front of me. Oh, speaking of hair, man, the hair in Violet Evergarden. Good hair. Okay, carry on.
No, that's it. That's all I have to say. And I think that's, unless you want to talk about the mini anime that you watch, like Coco Connect or Squid Girl or Orin Host Club, I think that might be it, and we can take a break.
Nah, let's. I'll come back to this some other time if it comes up.
We are going to talk about Coco Connect, so just like write up some notes for next episode.
Oh, I have notes.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's take a break, and then we'll discuss our spotlight. pitches.
Oh, yeah. Mine's going to win.
And we're back. For the second half of our podcast, we'll be doing spotlight pitches for Jeff to select for our next spotlight episode. John, why don't you go ahead and start?
Oh, shit, no, I don't have a thing yet. I was going to figure something out.
I forgot to decide who's going to start.
Here, I'm picking it from a list. I'm going to go with Na Na Na's Buried Treasure because that's a show that everybody else here will hate, but I love and nobody has seen.
What's it about?
I'm about to pull that out of my ass.
Cool. Knock me away.
There's this island, which is like the super high-tech crazy school, of course. And this kid goes there to go to the school, which makes sense because he's a kid or teenager or whatever. Anyway, when he moves into his apartment or whatever, his dorm room, there happens to be a ghost there named Na Na Na. Na Na Na? I think it's Na Na Na. I think that's her name. Yeah, that must be your name because that's the title. and she's like trying to find a whole bunch of treasure because I forget exactly why. Anyway, it's really cool because like when they go around hunting for these treasures, they're in these crazy like, it's almost like Indiana Jones style runes, but it's like built into the thing, like built into the island intentionally by her and a bunch of other people before she died. And they're like crazy high tech ruins, but they're not ruins, but it's fun. I don't know. And then there's like this super powered ninja dude or something. I don't know. I liked it.
What do you like about it? Is it like a sense of adventure? Is it wacky? Is it what?
Yes,
is it?
Those things.
Cool. I could have pitched it for you.
Yeah.
Just from my mean assumptions of the title.
There's a reason I didn't want to go first, but I didn't say it beforehand. Okay. There. That's my thing.
We fucked up. Do so, whatever you want. You know. Duncan, why don't you go ahead and take seconds.
Okay. I had two choices which I wasn't sure about, and they're both serious. And like, I think the one we're going to go with is one which is technically pitched to me a couple of weeks ago. And so I think we should watch Jeff Flowers of Evil. It was, I think, 2 or 3 years back now. It's a... Calling it a high school drama.
It's the most perfect representation of teenage angst ever.
Mm. that's a very good description. But it sort of digs down somewhat uncompromisingly and uncomfortably into the sort of confusions and sort of searching for a place that it can be as a teenager. And sort of the struggling to sort of set and understand your sort of place in, not society's probably too big of a stretch, but more like just in a social group. Like, who are you? What matters to you? And yeah, it's just a very, very
intense,
low key. And disturbing.
Those were opposite things that you two said.
But yeah, it's a lot of people hate it because of its visual style, which is rotoscoped. But I think that sort of weird, uncanny valley of its visual style perfectly suits the sort of unease it tries to generate.
Yes, both the show and the visuals are incredibly unsettling, and it works really well together.
Mm.
Interesting.
Cool.
Also, it has one of the best final episodes ever.
Well, I have failed to find something better than what I was going to pitch. So, I know, Jeff, that you watched Gunbuster a while ago.
I did.
And I am proposing the logical progression of that viewing experience, which is that we should watch Die Buster. Die Buster is interesting. I think how I described it was that it's an anime that would benefit from you not knowing it's a sequel to Gunbuster, but unfortunately that's not how media or capitalism works. But it's interesting because even though it is a continuation of many of the themes of Gunbuster, it's done in a very different style. This is a post Fooly Cooly anime. I think it's 2013. And it has a very interesting, almost Luluco-esque, that's Space Patrol Luluco aesthetic to it. And it's been a long time since I've watched it, and I remember it being surprisingly good by the end and kind of making me feel more complete about my watching of Gunbuster. And I like it a lot. I mean, I like all of Gainax's stuff a lot, with several notable exceptions. but this one is interesting as kind of a lesser child of the Gainax giant robot family. And I think it would be fun, since we couldn't do Gunbuster as a pitch, since we talked about it so thoroughly.
Yeah.
That we can do its sequel. I'm making air quotes.
Mm. I mean, it's interesting that you say that no one ever comes to it without having knowledge or seeing the first one, because that's exactly what I did when I saw it. I had no idea what Gunbuster was. I just knew I liked FLCL, and oh, this is another thing by those people. I'll watch that, I guess.
It's interesting that they've actually gone back and forth between calling it Diebuster, which I think is the original title, and then Gunbuster 2, which is a lot more overt. So, but now Eastern Star has the license, and they have titled it Gunbuster 2 : Diebuster, which is maybe the least artful way to market it. But yeah, sorry, Discotech, not Eastern Star. I mean, it doesn't matter. So yeah, there you go.
All right.
A smorgasbord of very different anime, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Treasure of Nanana sounds interesting. I don't think I am going to pick it, just because I don't know if it would.
I'll quit. I'm out of here.
Yeah. I'm just trying to. Okay, well, actually, just cut everything I've said for the last 30 seconds. Duncan, I think I'm going to go with yours, Flowers of Evil. Recently, I've been on a sort of like teenaged angst kick in my anime watching, and I don't think I would pick up that show on my own. And so, just because it sounds intriguing, but it's not like the low-hanging fruit that I've been picking up, so I'm interested to see like what it is. I think I'll probably just end up watching Diebuster on my own anyways, talking about it in an upcoming episode, but
I look forward to that.
I think Flowers of Evil sounds like it'll be an interesting show for all of us.
I recommend watching the entire thing in one sitting, which is what I did, because it'll wreck your entire day.
So wreck multiple days by watching it over time.
Yeah. Nah, you got it all at once. Just this onslaught of hell. Just do it.
Yeah. And I know Andy hates this, so in your face, Andy.
He actually hates Flowers of Evil.
Oh, nice.
Because of the art.
It was a huge commercial flop, from what I understand. Or at least Andy convinced me it was a huge commercial flop. Because he was like, yeah, look at those terrible DVD sales.
I mean, most things are a huge commercial flop.
Especially the more artistic ones, which this is definitely not a mainstream.
It's not a crowd pleaser, certainly.
Yeah. And I think like interesting failures, I think, make for a good deep dive discussion.
I don't even think it's a failure. I mean, commercially maybe, but like in terms of what it tries to do and what it wants to do, I think it succeeds better than the vast majority of things out there.
I mean, when John brought it up in the pit as like his almost pitch a couple of episodes ago, it was like immediately I thought, I haven't watched that or thought about that for ages, but that was a standout thing when I saw it. It just was very different from everything else I'd seen for a long time, and I don't think I've seen much like it since.
I think about it very regularly. It's something that stuck with me pretty hard, which is rare for me, because most things I just consume and then I move on. But Flowers of Evil has wormed its way into all of my mind space.
It's definitely quite a singular show.
All right.
I'm better at selling Flowers of Evil than I am anything else for the past 20 episodes.
Yeah, you didn't mention that Nanana's buried treasure includes a self-proclaimed master detective and her cross-dressing maid.
You're
so
right. It's been, you made me pull it out of my ass, man. I didn't remember enough. I had
it's
to look
been
it
a
up.
Maximum of of less than 4 years.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It premiered
right?
in spring 2014.
But also, I watched it when it aired, and I definitely don't like. I remember enjoying it a lot, and I remember like we talked about this before, but I remember tone and feeling more than I remember like details. And this is one of those cases where I just remember having a lot of fun watching it, and it had like this really cool art, and I don't know. Anyway,
so yeah. Ben, I know you said you had a second choice. What was that?
Oh, I was going to pitch X 1999 again, but it's yeah. way too much of an overlap with Fist of the North Star in yeah. terms of tone and quality. Next time Jeff has a choice, or maybe Jeff will pitch X 1999.
Yeah. I'm kind of over punishing you guys with bad anime. We'll try to choose something good from the future.
I mean, I think, and I said this when I pitched it, like, literally dozens of episodes ago, that it's such an interesting garbage fire because they're trying to cram, I think, 9 volumes of manga into 90 minutes of movie. So it's just like shit's just always happening constantly, and most of it is not, there's no impact because it's just going to the next absurd thing. So it's fun, as opposed to Fist of the North Star, which has a lot of waiting. I would feel like of waiting for things to happen.
Yeah, which is weird because it also crams like 50 some odd episodes worth of anime, which is probably like, you know, even more manga that went into X 1999. But it's still so weirdly slow.
Anyway.
My backup choice was Rakugo, because I know pretty much all the members of the cast loved it. But Jeff, I think, seems to have started his anime renaissance after that had aired, so... It was like a gap.
I don't think Ben watched Rakugo. Did you?
No, I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list, but I have a long list.
I think it's just you and me, Duncan. And yeah, it's very good.
Yeah,
I like the first season a lot more than the second season. But
I'd agree.
Okay. Still strong. Well, we don't have any reader mail, so I guess we'll go ahead and wrap this up. Go ahead and email us questions at keyframespodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at KeyframesPod. And with that, say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Bye, bye, bye.
Y'all suck.
Somewhat subdued without Andy here to do his creepy bye-bye.
Bye-bye! Came for the hot girl, stayed for... like someone talking about the history of Ramune, which is like English for lemonade, which I did not know until
what
Ramune.
You're making that up.
Yeah, lemonade. That's like the bottle with the little marble.
It's with the
stuff,
marble
right?
thing. You got to pop it out to drink. Yes. That's not. You're lying to me.
It's true. It's 100% true. Just Google it right now.
Oh, no.
Be owned.
My whole life is a lie. I can't do this anymore.